Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Actually, My God, it's spring. People can walk, not in five layers. It's about 70 degrees in New York City, about damn time. Welcome to the big show. Seth Kamen, Sean Palmer will be joining me shortly. And normally, no, there's a lot to talk about. Well, not so much. Sean is still devastated from his Syracuse Orangemen's poorest performance against Michigan. How you doing,
Wait
Mr. Palmer?
Wait a second. Really? Porous.
That was one of the worst Final Four games I've ever seen. That was a horrendous game.
Okay, but that's not a porous performance. I believe that that's two teams that actually played relatively good defense. And that the shots just didn't fall.
Oh, I didn't think that was good defense. I thought it was just awful offense and awful execution and stupid fundamentals.
Okay. Well, we can agree to disagree. I believe that both teams shot under 45%. Michigan shot better from three. They got a couple more foul shots, and that was the game, right then and there.
And fair enough.
I believe it was one of the most horrendously officiated games. I think the whole weekend was horrendously officiated.
Well,
starting with the Louisville game and Wichita State game, and ending last night. I think all three games were horrendously officiated.
Yeah, there were some blatant, I thought, mistakes. I actually remarked on Facebook, I thought the most impressive team on Saturday was Wichita State. Even though they couldn't hold on against Louisville, they had a great game plan. It was a wonderful game, and they hung tough for 39 and a half minutes.
The issue was the same with every team that played Louisville. Louisville goes 10 deep. They press like crazy. They clamp down on defense, and they run you out of the building. They get you tired. And Wichita State didn't have the depth to do it. Michigan didn't have the depth to do it. Michigan only went 7 or 8 deep. And McGarry got into foul trouble. And when you run constantly for 40 minutes, like Louisville does, you need to have a deep bench. And they just didn't have it.
Well, I disagree with you on the Wichita State game was certainly not a fast-paced game. It only became somewhat more. What did you say?
The end was.
Well, what happened was the point guard got into foul trouble. Elmstead, who I believe shot 1 for 10, but what he was so valuable in was controlling the tempo. If he doesn't get the disputed fourth foul, I don't think Louisville comes back. Then of course you also, there were a couple dubious calls and the terrible, terrible jump ball call with 6 seconds to go. I'm actually surprised. I mean, I was stunned. I actually thought Wichita State, watching that game, I thought Wichita State was the better team, but props to Louisville. And then, as bad as I've spoken, people call me a curmudgeon when it comes to sports and I'm snarky, and I thought last night was a wonderful, wonderful game. I thought it was well played. I thought there were some surprises. I thought there was great athleticism. I thought there were some moves that could have been made better possibly by John Boeheim. But I thought it was a really fun game to watch and a really well-played game. One of the better finals we've seen in a while.
I think disagree on the type of game that we like to see. I didn't enjoy last night's game at all. I think it was a tremendously fun game to watch. You're right in that concept. But I don't think there was any defense played last night at all. I think it was a transition game up and down. There were very few set shots, very few set plays. It was who could run the fastest up and down the court. And that's great. I mean, that's one style of game. And I think it's an entertaining style of game, but I don't think it's a well-played style of game.
I
didn't think it was well-played at all. I thought that there was very little, if any, defense played last night.
I thought, I don't know, I thought there was some. But when you have two teams who score 80 points, you know, most likely it's usually not a defensive battle. I guess maybe the Wichita-Louisville game was more of the compromise because I didn't think Michigan had that much problem with Syracuse's own, to be honest. McGarry had a nice game, had seven assists out of the high post. He played the game that we expected from Tyler Zeller, except whichever the Zellers it is.
Tyler's on the Cavaliers.
You know, that's why I forget, because nobody really remembers the Cavaliers. Apologize to Dave White and the rest of our Cleveland fans out there. But now season is done. I thought the Spike Albright story was pretty crazy last night. I thought there was some great athleticism. I understand, you know, it's difficult to play a strictly fundamental game in a more fast paced offense, in a fast paced battle. It just is.
Totally agree. And
that's the first thing we've agreed on in 5 minutes.
Being down the energy of the Final Four, and I know you haven't been to one, and I hope at some point you do get to go. Not to an NIT Final Four, I mean like a real Final Four. And sorry, that was a little bit. The energy down there, granted, I think that there were more Michigan fans than anybody else. Definitely more than Syracuse fans. Definitely more than Wichita State fans. Louisville, I'm not sure where the divide came down, but there were. If I ever hear "Go Blue" again, it'll be too soon. I mean, it was just all over the place, and it's great to see that Michigan fans travel. Louisville was 6.5-hour drive. Wichita. Well, who knew that Wichita was even going to be there? So it was kind of hard to make plans for that. And they were well represented, but I don't think that they were in the top three. I think it probably went Michigan first, then Louisville, then Syracuse, and then Wichita State as far as
I have to give my comrade in arms credit, though. He a year ago, he booked a hotel room just in case.
I have one all ready for Texas next year.
That's what I was asking. So when Maryland's there, I'm going to take it over from you?
Exactly, basically. I mean,
there we go.
But here's the thing. Let's look at these teams going into next year real quick. Who gets lost? I don't know too much about Wichita State, so I can't really speak to them. But let's look at Michigan. Michigan has a pretty good recruiting class. Top 25 recruiting class, but if I'm John Beilein and I'm giving advice to these guys as to whether you should go pro, Trey Burke, I don't think there's any choice that he's got to go at this point. I mean, he's a top 10 pick. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree he's a top 10 pick, but I agree he's gonna go.
He's got nothing else.
Yeah,
he's done everything he can do. So next you got Mitch McGarry, and what most people don't know is Mitch McGarry will be 21 when the draft comes around. And the NBA drafts on potential. They don't necessarily draft on what you can do for me today. And Mitch McGarry, I don't think, gets any higher stock than he does right now.
That I'm not sure on. My assumption is he'll go. I agree that obviously the NBA drafts on potential, not on past results. I think he could use another year of seasoning, though.
Oh, I don't disagree with that at all. I really do think he would be great if he used another year, but I don't think that Mitch McGarry's stock can get much higher, being that he's 21 already.
Probably. I think it's a very reasonable argument.
So let's go a step further. Then you have Glenn Robinson III, who played a very good championship game, has played a decent tournament. And again, based on potential, I would say that he probably has to go too. Not has to, but I think he does. I think he's a first-round pick. He's 6'6", right out of the mold of his father. And from ironically, what I saw in Chad Ford's first mock draft is they have him going to the Milwaukee Bucks. which would be a taste of irony. I think he goes as well.
Well, that leaves us with Tim Hardaway Jr.
Then you have Tim Hardaway. And from what I saw, Tim Hardaway is probably a second-round pick. Definitely not going to break the first round. But he's another guy where is he at the top of where he is? I mean, I don't know. I didn't watch enough of his game. But he's a tweener. He doesn't have the athleticism that his father did by any stretch. I mean, to have that athleticism is kind of remote to begin with. So he's a little bit bigger than his father, and he didn't show a jump shot. So to me, he's a second-round pick. I don't know if he comes out or not. But that's a whole lot of offense that Michigan loses going into next year if they lose those three guys.
Yeah, but the nice thing about Michigan is it's not a school like Louisville or Kentucky where basketball is the, you know, the masses will be happy with one Final Four for a while.
Agreed.
You know, Louisville, although they went to the BCS game this year, is a basketball school. Kentucky, who brought in, you know, possibly the greatest recruiting class in the history of basketball, the two Harrison brothers, Julius Randle, James Young, were all top 10. They're
maybe
gonna be
Andre Wiggins too. I mean,
that's right.
He's
the number one.
They may have
number
the top,
one.
Yeah, they may have the top recruit in the country coming in too. I mean, and they bring back Willie Cauley Stein, and who's the other guy that they're bringing back?
I think Poitras is coming back.
Yeah, so they have probably 7 of the top 20 players in the country.
Wow.
Maybe
30. Yeah, the problem is Poitras and Cauley Stein did not live up to their expectations this year. Archie Harrell, I think, is transferring again, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
Okay, here you go. Wichita State, they lose a couple of their guys, but they lose Paul Hall, they lose Malcolm Armstead. But Cree Anthony Early, who had 24-10 against Louisville, is back. Ron Baker, who's that redshirt freshman, who could shoot from wherever, from the parking lot, is back. Van Vliet, who is the guy who had the big shot to beat Ohio State, comes back. So they should be pretty good.
Yep. Syracuse loses Michael Carter-Williams in all likelihood, who played a horrendous game.
He was terrible.
But I also believe he was the victim of two horrendous calls. So, I mean, when you're playing with four fouls, it's a little bit different the way that you can play, especially since his big contribution is generally on defense. But that being said, he did play a horrendous game. Brandon Trish ends his Orange career with the most wins by any starting player on the Orange in history. That's a pretty impressive group of players that he holds that record. So he goes on to what some pundits probably say he could probably make an 8 to 10 year career out in Europe. He's got that type of smarts and that type of game. They lose James Sutherland, who seemed to be MIA for the first 35 minutes of Saturday's game. And they got a good recruiting class coming in. But the question is, again, as Syracuse always does, you don't have to – the zone is the zone, which I think we see more and more is a good thing for incoming recruits because the zone's an easy thing to pick up. But this is a lot of freshmen to throw in. You're going to have a freshman point guard. Trevor Cooney is going to be the two guard, and Trevor Cooney just scares the living daylights out of me. And they have front court depth, but let's see if the front court can turn it on after this year being bench players. So it's a maturing process.
Does
CJ Fair come back? I believe CJ Fair does come back. I don't think he's a first round pick yet. I think next year he might be. But again, a year ago, Michael Carter Williams got 24 minutes the entire freshman year. So, I mean, nobody saw him developing the way that he did either. So, who knows? But and Louisville loses the heart in Peyton Siva. They probably lose Russ Smith as well.
He declared today.
Oh, I thought his father had said it, but okay, he declared as well. And the guy in the middle, who I can't ever pronounce his name, but kills Syracuse every time.
Gorgui Dang.
There you go, Dang. Is that Luol Deng's brother?
No.
No, okay. Well, Gorgui Dang, who played a phenomenal tournament. So, yeah, there you go. I mean, all four could potentially be back at least. I think all four will definitely be ranked in the top 25, no question, next year. I would like to take a little bit of props for my call that Mike Rice would be fired after the video, because I think we had a conversation last week where you said that this is already done, there's no big deal, because he already got his suspension, and I compared it to Bobby Knight. Yeah.
No, I
didn't. Yeah. Go back to the videotape, or audio tape.
Listen, I don't really think it takes much. Everyone and their mother knew he was going to be fired.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to listen to that again, because I believe that you had said that he had served his suspension already, and that would be the end of it, because he already served it.
I thought it was ridiculous.
Right, you thought it was ridiculous, but you didn't think he would be fired.
Oh, no, I thought he'd be fired.
Okay. And I'm kind of glad that the athletic director got fired as well. And as far as the president being fired, I don't think it's really going to matter all that much. But Mike Rice gone. Now the question is, who takes his job? Pundits have said perhaps Ben Howland. My pick was Danny Hurley. But he just re-upped in Rhode Island.
Right. I don't think that the Rutgers job is really the job for Ben Howland. I don't think you go from UCLA to Rutgers.
He needs a rebound job, and it can't be on the West Coast.
Yeah, but I think he may take a year. Rutgers is in shambles, and or he could just say it as, look, you know, my career, you know, my reputation is in shambles. This team is in shambles. Maybe it is a good fit. But Rutgers,
right,
to me, would be...
This is a no-lose situation for the next coach.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not trying to do this just to bust your balls, but, I mean, a reasonable pick to me would be someone like a Mike Hopkins, like a big-time assistant at a big-time school. Where you're going to, like, almost like similar to Chris Collins going to Northwestern, where you'll have time to build it. And he'll be enthusiastic. No, I'm not saying him per se, because I don't see him leaving Syracuse to go to Rutgers. But I think that kind of assistant coach makes sense.
Okay. Well, where are those assistant coaches located? I mean, Duke has Wojciechowski.
And I am not the world's biggest expert on the top assistant coaches in the country. That's not, you know, but I've got to figure that Patino, that, you know, people of the family tree of Patino, of the family tree of, let's say, Boeheim, but you know that better than I do. You know, there are top assistant coaches that haven't gotten jobs. And, you know, I think that's maybe one of the North Carolina assistants. I don't know. You know, I don't have anyone in mind.
Right. Okay. Well, fair enough. Well, let's talk about Rick Pitino, who may have had the best week ever in basketball. He gets elected to the Hall of Fame and then wins a national championship, becoming the first coach to win a national championship with two different teams. And he took his third to a Final Four.
Yeah, and he made the Hall of Fame.
And his son became the coach of Minnesota.
Oh, we were talking about, we couldn't figure out who would end up being the coach of Minnesota.
There you go, Richard Pitino.
Yeah, I don't really have much of an opinion on it.
No, I just think that, he's got a sweet deal, though. I mean, he hasn't won a championship, a conference championship anywhere, and now he's got a Big Ten job.
Well, to be fair, he also was only the head coach for about 2 years. So that's not – I mean, I can't hold that really against them. But it's not a
– they're hiring the name before they're hiring the coach.
Of course. You know, it's not a team I look at and say, wow, you know, this is a place that can really build in the next 2, 3, 5 years. You know, it's Minnesota. They're there. You know, they have no great. You know, they went to a Final Four with Clem Haskins in 97, 98, around there. And that's, you know, then they had the huge academic scandal, and that was the end of that. In football, they've been practically irrelevant forever. You know, they're a hockey school. So whoever the coach is, you know, Tubby Smith, as highly thought of as he has, had 5 or 6 years to build that program, and nothing really came out of it. So I'm not really convinced that Patino, that there is a right answer. It's just one of those schools where you really don't see any huge potential. And I'm sure there are hundreds of thousands of people in St. Paul that are listening to this right now, and I do apologize. But you're more than welcome to call me and tell me if I'm wrong at 760-283-0846. How about that for a segue?
There you go. I like it.
Thank you.
I mean, the NBA, speaking of NBA Hall of Fame, I mean, the announcement was made on Monday, which was, that was yesterday. I'm sorry to everybody. I took a 5:30 flight back from Atlanta and took a nap and woke up about 10 minutes ago not knowing, A, where I was, what state I was in, why I was getting up at 6:50, because I was like, do I have a doctor's appointment? And I was like, no, I have a radio show in 10 minutes. So excuse me if I am a little discombobulated today. But
Wait a minute.
NBA.
You want us to feel bad for you.
I am not asking you to feel bad for me. I'm asking you to excuse my ignorance.
I was going to say, you do realize I haven't had a day off in over a month. And I'm working about 13 to 14 hours a day right now.
I am not asking anybody to have sympathy for me. I am asking you to indulge me a little bit in the fact that I am now on probably 4 hours of sleep in the last 72. And I may just mess up a little bit. So that's all I'm asking for. I think I deserve some indulgence.
Wow. Apparently I entered another pool that my friend Stacey Campbell was running for a charity, and apparently I won.
How much did you win in this?
I have no idea.
In this non-monetary pool.
Oh, of course. I have no idea. I didn't even know I won. She just Facebooked me. Thanks, Dace.
Well, there you go.
So
the Hall of Fame was announced yesterday. We started down this road.
Right.
Rick Pitino was amongst the 12 people that made the Hall of Fame. It's a lot of people to make the Hall of Fame in 1 year, but 12. So running down the class, Di Lewis of Houston, the coach of Phi Sigma Gamma, Jerry Tarkanian in UNLV, and Sylvia Hatchell of North Carolina. Those are the coaches. I don't know anything about Sylvia Hatchell, but I assume that that's women's basketball.
She coached the University of North Carolina. They won a title actually with Marion Jones. They won a title in the mid-90s with her. She was one of the revolutionary coaches.
Former NBA stars Bernard King and Gary Payton, former University of Virginia star Dawn Staley. Inductees announced previously were Edwin E.B. Henderson, a direct elect from the Early African Pioneer Committee, longtime Indiana Pacer guard Roger Brown. You probably know a little bit about Roger Brown more than I do. Oscar Schmidt of Brazil, the leading scorer in the Olympic history. Richie Guerin, a star for the Knicks in the 50s, which if we called your dad, I'm sure he'd have lots of stories about him. And Russ Granick, the longtime assistant commissioner of the NBA, which I think was kind of, I don't even know. Yeah, you know, I have a problem with that because I think that was strictly pushed in from David Stern. But if you think about it, Russ Granick was the one that came up with the idea of the Dream Team and bringing professionals into the NBA, into the Olympics. He's also started the whole social media with the NBA and NBA.com. Not to say that that wouldn't have happened already, but they were at the forefront of it. Maybe it's just a little too soon for me. But
wow.
Guy Lewis and Jerry Tarkanian, I think, were definite musts into the Hall of Fame, especially Tarkanian. I think he's overdue.
Wow. I mean, it's like everything else, though. It's, you know my feelings on Hall of Fames, that unless you're great, I don't quite grasp the idea.
Well, is Martinian great?
Yes. I have no Guy Lewis, well, he went to two title games. I don't really know if he was a great coach. I just don't know. He was a little bit before my time. Gary Payton is a no-brainer. Rick Pitino is a no-brainer. I mean, Richie Guerin, I know a little bit about. He's a shooting guard for the Knicks back in the 50s. He was a nice player, but I never really heard a huge stampede for his induction.
What about Bernard King?
Absolutely. Bernard King should have been in. Okay. Bernard King was great.
Well, I'm asking. These are what I'm saying. So,
yeah.
So you're in agreement so far with you're iffy on Guy Lewis. I'm saying you're not a slam dunk on Guy Lewis. Like, okay, maybe. Okay, Tarkanian and Pitino, you're slam dunks on?
Yeah, I have no debate. If Pitino had actually not gone to the, remember, it's an all-inclusive Hall of Fame. It's not a pro or a college or an international.
Right, exactly.
Which sometimes kind of makes you, I don't want to say roll your eyes at some of the participants,
That's what it is.
Yeah, Oscar Schmidt is an absolute Hall of Famer. I remember him from, he played in the late 80s. He scored 45 against the U.S., I believe, one time in like 88, 89.
Yeah.
Roger Brown was interesting. He was banned from the NBA for, I forget why. There was a book called Loose Balls, which is a story of the ABA. Funny title aside, it is one of the best basketball books ever. Really enjoyable read. I think it was written by Terry Pluto. Brown ended up in the ABA with the Pacers. I think he worked at like GM and then went to the Pacers and played there for his entire career. And was one of the mainstays of Indiana, who was probably the best franchise in the ABA, along with Mel Daniels, who's also a Hall of Famer. Sylvia Hatchell, I know she was
I got the bio of Sylvia Hatchell. She's one of three women's coaches to record 900 wins and has won national championships on the AIAW, NIAI, and NCAA levels. While the AIAW was women before the NCAA. That's where Ann Donahue Myers, later became Ann Donahue Myers, totally destroyed everybody. So 900 wins is 900 wins. I mean, I don't care what level you do it at. That's a Hall of Famer to me. Dawn Staley, absolutely a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, she was a great guard.
Two-time National College Player of the Year. I don't know how many men you had that. I mean, let's think about this. Two-time Player of the Year.
Ralph Sampson.
Alcindor?
It would probably be Alcindor, Walton, Russell, and Ralph Sampson. The names that would come to my mind.
All are Hall of Famers?
Yes. On the college level, yes.
Right. So there you go. I was going to look up Roger Brown, but I didn't get a chance to do that. And Gary Payton, to me, the best defensive player I've ever seen.
Yeah, Gary Payton is a no-brainer. Great point guard for the Sonics for many, many years. Nine-time All-Star. Led them to the finals in, I think, 96, probably 96, with Sean Kemp.
Yeah, the
they thought that team was going to take over the NBA and just never did. And then he ended up winning a title off the bench for Miami in 2006.
Yeah, he had a little vagabond career towards the end. He got traded to Milwaukee for Terrell Brandon, or in the Terrell Brandon deal. I'm not sure if Terrell went to Ray Allen went to the Bucks in that deal. He got traded for Ray Allen. Then he went to the Lakers. On that
right.
team that was supposed to win everything because they had five Hall of Famers on that team.
Right, and I think they lost in five to Detroit, if I remember correctly.
Right, yes, they did, to Ben Wallace's Pistons. And then he went over to Miami and won his title and then retired. But
right.
As far as a guard play, the best defensive guard I've ever seen. He was what you would want as a lockdown defender.
Yeah, he was.
Aptly nicknamed the glove.
Yeah, no argument on my side. He was the preeminent, along with Jordan. Him and Jordan pretty much dominated the all defensive teams in the 90s.
Now, a couple of guys coming up in the future, and I'd like to hear your opinions on these. One is Alonzo Mourning.
He will get in.
That's not my question.
He would be a borderline call for me. He, you know, my feeling for those of, we've had this discussion over the years on the show.
Yeah.
And my feeling is that if you're going to make the Hall of Fame, it should be great. You're not very good. Does not make the Hall of Fame. Does not make my Hall of Fame. I would probably put Mourning in. Mourning was a very, very good college player. Was the second best center in the league for many years. I'm sure he won the NBA Man of the Year a couple times for all his charitable endeavors. I think he's in. He would be a borderline pick for me, but I wouldn't raise too much. I wouldn't raise too much of a fit one way or the other.
Okay, I got three more guys for you, and I'm in. I would put Mourning in as well.
Okay.
Number two is Chris Webber.
No. Chris Webber.
No, really, because Chris Webber. Let me try and explain. Chris Webber was an All NBA player. For 5 years.
First team All-NBA?
I believe it was second team All-NBA, which is what Mourning was. I think people forget how good he really was.
I think people are always left wanting more with Chris Webber.
Agreed. They remember what he couldn't do rather than what he did.
Right. He was the great player that never struck me as wanting the responsibility of being the great player. And not in an irresponsible way, forgetting all the Michigan rigmarole, you know, all that happened. You know, he's a 19-year-old kid. I'm not really going to hold it against him. But he never struck me as the killer instinct guy. You know, that would be the, you know, Mourning. Now, would I take him over Mourning as a player? Probably on talent, yes. And not that I thought he didn't care, because that's not really where I'm going with it. But there was an ingredient with him. He had so much talent. He could run, he could shoot, he could rebound, he could pass, he could do everything. He was a preeminent five-tool NBA power forward. But there was an intangible that was not there. He couldn't
lead. Yeah, I agree with that.
And so I find it difficult to reward him with a Hall of Fame bid. Again, kind of right on the border, but I would probably say no.
Well, but here's my counter to that, and I don't necessarily disagree with you, playing devil's advocate. Bill Walton, I wanted more, right? Different reason, entirely different reason. One's injuries and one's whatever he didn't do. But Bill Walton, I wanted more. A lot more.
Bill Walton won a lot more, or Bill Walton, you'd want a lot more?
No, I wanted more.
Oh, I think that's incredibly unfair.
Why?
Bill Walton is debatably the greatest college basketball player of all time. According to people who I respect, he would have been one of the top 3 to 5 centers of all time if he could have stayed healthy.
Right, okay.
And I can't hold it against him. And again, this is not a professional Hall of Fame. This is a basketball Hall of Fame. So he would have gotten
right,
in on his college accolades alone.
Which is why I'm saying Webber had 2 years. So Walton had 3 years in college, and Webber had two.
Right.
Right? So what? So, and Walton has a championship in the NBA. That's true, but very little else. Would you agree with that? He has two championships, actually.
No. He had two championships. The team in 79.
One of which he did very little of.
No, he was a sixth man on the team with possibly the greatest basketball team of all time in the 86 Celtics. But
right.
He was the best player on what could have been, potentially, the greatest dynasty in the late 70s with Portland. And unfortunately, he got hurt. Would I like? I don't really know how to gauge that. To me, he was a Hall of Famer. He would have been an all time great. And
right, but you're using the word that I'm saying. He would have been.
So
the Hall
would
of Fame isn't based on potential. It's based on what you did. It's not like the NBA draft.
Understood.
Right? I mean, so, okay. So the next guy that I have on my list is Dikembe Mutombo, who to me was the best defensive player I think I've ever seen.
I don't think so. You know, he was a great defensive player, had minimal offensive skills. Never won a title, never was the best player on a championship caliber team. Very good, not great.
Okay. I compare him a little bit to Dennis Rodman. Rodman just had better players around him.
Well,
I mean, look at who he had around him. He played on bad Hawks teams. He played on adequate Nuggets teams. He played on the Knicks and Rockets later in his career, but those were the two big teams that he played on.
Oh, he also played on the Sixers team that went to the NBA Finals.
True.
Iverson and won.
Right, and the 1 year he got to play with somebody which was probably better than him, he went to a Finals.
Yeah, the East was terrible then. He was a very good player. I don't know if he's, you know, a great ambassador. Again, he may end up getting a bit, because he's also, I mean, his influence beyond just the court may help him get in. And I wouldn't have much of an issue with it. I don't think, I wouldn't put him in the Hall of Fame, but I would tip my hat to him if he got in.
So the last guy is the guy that you really want more from. And the problem that you want is, I would say, is the Bill Walton concept. Well, I think there's two of these guys, and I think you put them together. Except one has a much better college career, and the other one probably has a better pro career. I'll put Grant Hill and Tracy McGrady.
Tracy McGrady is not a Hall of Famer.
Tracy McGrady made the All-NBA team for 6 years, second season.
Understood. But Tracy McGrady did one thing. Tracy McGrady scored. Tracy McGrady was not a great teammate. Tracy McGrady was not a great defensive player. Tracy McGrady is not a Hall of Famer.
Grant Hill.
I've had this discussion before. Grant Hill is the most difficult. Grant Hill is the most difficult person to kind of gauge in this. If you count his college degree, I mean, the reality is if you count his college, then it's a no-brainer. Then he's in.
That's my opinion. Because if Christian Laettner's in, so is Grant Hill.
Right. I mean, well, Christian Laettner is possibly the greatest college forward I've ever seen. But his NBA career certainly wouldn't warrant it. And Danny Manning was the second greatest college forward I've ever seen. And his pro career wouldn't have warranted it. Hill will get in based on his college. On the pro, he probably wouldn't have. And it is too bad because, similarly, he played with lousy teams, was a great player, and then, you know, had 5 years where he was injured. But based on his college, he'll get in.
Okay. And I think Grant Hill was, as a pro, when he played with Detroit, as complete a player as I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, that's it. I remember he averaged about 27, 6, and 6.
Yep.
And, you know, this was a team with no talent around him.
But, yeah, he was as complete a player as I remember since Magic Johnson.
Yeah.
A rebounder, not as good a passer.
And that's a pretty accurate comparison, except he was 6'9" forward as opposed to a 6'9" guard.
Yeah, I mean,
So anyway, but we definitely have those to look forward to in the upcoming years, because I believe next year is Mutombo. Sorry, next year is Mourning along with Weber. So it's Weber and Mourning along with Sam Cassell, Steve Francis, and Penny Hardaway.
No, no.
And Robert Ory.
No.
Well, I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just saying that, and then Mutombo and Stephon Marbury, then Iverson and Michael Finley in 16, and then in 17 is an interesting mix of Shaquille, who's in, I mean, whatever, and Yao Ming. And Yao Ming, I think, may get your Walton treatment.
Yao Ming will get in without a second thought, because Yao Ming brought basketball to Asia. He made the NBA.
Right, but that's as a contributor. That's not as a player.
Right. Well, that's where he would be getting in.
I'm sorry?
Well, that's how he would probably deserve to get in. He may get in as a player, but he deserves more as a contributor.
Okay. I mean, I think he should get in as a player. He played in the Olympics a couple of years. He played very well in the Olympics. He was an all-NBA player when he was playing. He just got hurt. I mean, he played in 486 games. Bill Walton played in 468 games.
Right. The difference being Bill Walton, as we said, was the preeminent college player possibly of
right.
all time.
It was the collegiate aspect to him. Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
Well, what I find interesting is, I mean, these are three pretty weak classes that you've just mentioned. And there are 12 players that are coming. There are 12 player people in this class.
Right. Well, there are also coaches that probably should be in, such as Greg Popovich, George Karl, Rick Adelman. I mean, those three guys should probably be in at this point. There are guys that are still left over, such as Tim Hardaway, Vlade Divac, perhaps.
Are those Hall of Famers to you? Tim Hardaway is a really good player.
I don't know if Divac is.
I don't think I mean, Tim Hardaway was a nice player, a very nice player, but I don't know if I think of him as a Hall of Famer.
Is Richmond a Hall of Famer to you?
No.
How about Maurice Cheeks?
No.
Okay. Do you think Divac is?
No.
See, I think Divac for his international stuff.
I was going to say, that was what I was about to say. Divac for his international may get in.
Okay, how about Jack Sigma?
Jack Sigma wasn't in by now with people who had seen him. By the time I saw Sigma led the Sonics in 79 to the title. And by the time I saw him, he was in his mid to late 30s, playing in Milwaukee
right, with
a big blonde
Buck. Yeah.
It's kind of hard for me to gauge.
How about Ben Wallace?
No, absolutely not.
He made more All-Star teams than Rodman.
That's fine. He averaged less than 6 points a game. You can have a guy who's one-dimensional, but you can't have someone who's that one-dimensional.
Wait, you don't think Rodman was that one-dimensional? Really?
I don't really know. I guess Rodman is such a – the variable of Rodman is he could guard anybody. He could guard a point guard. He could guard a center. And because of that, he was more valuable as a defensive player than Wallace was. The rebound,
okay.
I guess it's more impressive to me that a 6'6 guy could average the 17, 18, 19 rebounds a game as opposed to a 7'1 guy.
Oh, Wallace is not 7'1.
Whatever, he's a center. He's 7 foot?
No, he's like 6'9.
Is he that small? Okay.
Yeah. He's Charles Barkley at 6'9.
Yeah, well, Charles Barkley was 6'4.
I understand. I'm saying he's a 7. He's a center in Charles Barkley size, which means that he's like 6 inches shorter than a normal center.
Gotcha.
What did you think of the coverage for the NCAA tournament? I mean, this is the first year that TNT went together with CBS, and there was a whole lot of intermingling, especially last night. Not even last night, the whole Final Four, seeing Doug Gottlieb, Eddie Johnson, Kenny Smith. It was like the TNT set on CBS.
It's not the first year. They did it last year.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah. I enjoy it. I think I think Gottlieb is very – I like Gottlieb a lot. I didn't really take too much offense to the white man comment. So, and the guys, Barkley and Kenny Smith and Anthony, you know, give them credit. For guys who cover the NBA, they did their research for this. And I enjoyed it. Yes, for those who are – it's harder for me to follow that much, as much on that anymore, simply because, well, I run my own CPA practice and I'm in the heart of busy season. So a lot of it I have on, but I'm not paying as much attention. I'm not a huge Seth Davis guy. Steve Smith doesn't add too much for me. But I thought they did a pretty good job. I had no major complaints. And I prefer to see I'd be able to see all four games. So
I think Charles Barkley needs to take some enunciation lessons. So it doesn't
that's not the first time we've heard that.
No, I agree. So he's not talking with marbles. I love Kenny Smith. I think Kenny Smith is fantastic. I'm not a big Gottlieb fan, but then again, there's a whole lot of history between Gottlieb and Syracuse. So
for those of you who are not aware, Gottlieb is to Syracuse as Dick Vitale is to Maryland.
Yeah. I think that's a fair comparison. I mean, Doug Gottlieb gives no credit to Syracuse ever. And Syracuse fans despise him. So I think that's a fair comparison. I got to tell you, I did miss Chris Webber on that broadcast because throughout the – and I understand you don't watch a whole lot of TNT NBA stuff. I think Chris Webber may be the best color analyst.
I think Webber's very good.
I think
he's very good.
And were you surprised seeing Webber at the game last night?
No, I figured deep down, I'm sure he still has an affinity for the school. He lives in Atlanta. It's convenient. He works for TBS, who's, as you said, is partnering on the show. It was just too easy. Now, I don't think, you know, I'm sure he didn't appreciate being publicly guilted by Jalen Rose and by the rest of the Fab Five. And it would have been a nice gesture if he actually sat with them. But, you know, that's his decision. And not shocked. Were you?
Well, I found two things that were interesting. First of all, by not sitting with them, I'm not sure. Remember, the three other Fab, Jimmy King, Ray Jackson, and Juwan Howard, were sitting in the student section. It's Michigan that's tried to distance themselves from Chris Webber, not the other way around.
Well, I agree. And the 10-year ban, that I believe, ends next month.
So is it a case of maybe Michigan telling Chris Webber not to be there?
No.
So I wouldn't put that all on Chris Webber.
I'm not putting anything on Chris Webber. I don't think Michigan would. I don't think Michigan did that. I think Michigan, to be perfectly honest, I think Michigan was much more preoccupied, had more things to be preoccupied with than whether Chris Webber was going to be there or not.
I agree. What I did find very interesting was sitting there at the Syracuse game on Saturday night, where they said that Syracuse is back for their first Final Four in 10 years. And I was like, okay. And Michigan is back for their first Final Four since 1993. And I was like, no, that game never happened.
Nah.
According to you, they weren't there.
According to me?
According to the NCAA, that never occurred. They didn't appear. There's no banner.
They were there. Because that was the 20th, and I actually told someone this at Passover, that was the 20th anniversary, the Michigan-North Carolina game, of one of the most important nights of my life. That was the anniversary, the first night I ever got drunk.
Oh, I was like, this is a PG-rated show, Seth.
Drunk. And drunk to the point of throwing up in the bathroom of the Fairlawn Jewish Center.
I do remember it being on Passover, though, because I remember walking out going, did he really just call a timeout when you didn't have any and everybody else knew it?
So I ended up missing the game, unfortunately. And it was my first, but not my last hangover.
No, no, not at all. So we got about 10 minutes left. I did want to bring something to those people that care, which I don't believe that my co-host probably does. But the New York Islanders today announced that they will not be moving to Brooklyn in 2015. They will be moving to Brooklyn in 2014.
Ah, aren't you clever? Congratulations.
No, no, no. I think it's important they moved it up a year. I mean, that it goes to show that they're moving on. That there will be hockey at the Barclays Center a little bit earlier, and hopefully it won't be as irrelevant. I mean, like I said before, my season ticket deposit is already down. Whether I'm in New York or not is a different story, but at least my season ticket deposit is down. Now, just as a little preview for what's coming up in the next couple of weeks, hopefully we'll have Jarrett Swirling on. I know we've been promoting him for a couple of weeks,
yeah.
But I really think that it's important to get him right before
playoffs. I actually talked to him yesterday. He'll do the show.
Okay.
He actually is working the Knicks game. But you got to stop promoting him until we actually get him on the show again.
Fair enough.
So
okay. So I hope we get him in the next couple of weeks. That's not promoting. That's a hope. We hope to also have our esteemed hockey correspondent, Keegan Reed, as well. We will have our NBA draft preview, but it will be on a different day since my beloved co-host will be modeling.
Oh, that was actually canceled or pushed back.
Aww. So. We're hoping to see you in the J. Crew catalog.
Yeah. I don't think I will be anywhere near a J. Crew catalog. And if anyone has ever seen me in person, no one really believed I should be modeling. But it was still very, it was postponed. It was not canceled, but it was appreciated. It was a nice ego boost.
Okay.
We'll have an NFL draft
gonna...
preview as well. You said the NBA.
What's that?
We'll have the NFL draft preview.
I meant our NFL draft preview. So looking at the calendar, our NFL draft preview will take place the last Tuesday in April. So we're looking at April 23rd will be our NFL draft preview. The NBA draft preview will be sometime in June.
Right.
We're going to start the question of the week again now that hopefully I'm sorry. Mr. Kamen, this will be the last sleep-deprived show for you.
It will.
Congratulations on finishing another year.
Not yet. I got a lot of hours left, but thank you, though. I look forward to having a life again.
You're coming down the home stretch.
That's what they tell me.
That's what we all have our confidence in Mr. Kamens. I mean, no, if you need your taxes done late, Seth and Sean at gmail.com. Or
there
find us on Twitter or Facebook, and we will set you up with one of the best CPAs in New York.
Oh, you're just saying that because you got a big refund this year.
Well, I am. But that has nothing to do with you. That just means that you were able to put it on paper, which I couldn't.
Yep.
And I'm perfectly okay understanding that.
Fair enough.
Okay, so we got about 6 minutes left. So I'm going to finish up first this week, and I'll let you go.
Okay.
So I just came back from the Final Four. Again, Final Four is fantastic. I think that anybody should go if your team is in it. Spend the money. It's worth it. It's even better when you can resell your ticket for more than you paid for it.
Isn't that fantastic. Isn't that illegal?
No. There's a certain percentage that you can oversell it.
Okay.
I will not tell you whether I oversold it within the percentage.
Okay.
That will not be disclosed. So anyway, but one of the atrocities that I found out this year at the Final Four. So you and I have both heard of Spencer Haywood, correct?
This is what I was going to bring up.
I stole your thunder.
That's right. I stole yours last week. It's fine.
Okay. So you would agree with me that Spencer Haywood is an NBA Hall of Famer?
I believe so.
Okay. Spencer Haywood also basically led a revolution in the ABA going straight to college, straight to the pros from high school. Him and Moses Malone all went, were not permitted to go to the NBA straight from high school, so they went to the ABA and set a precedent and actually went to the Supreme Court and won their rights to do that. The reason you can't do that anymore is because it's been collectively bargained. Different story. Well, somebody called Spencer Haywood this week and said, hey, you're in the Hall of Fame. An NBA player, an NBA representative supposedly did. And then he found out, so he got all excited. Then he found out that he wasn't in the Hall of Fame. I don't know what NBA representative told Spencer Haywood that he was in the Hall of Fame only to take it away, but that's horrendous. I mean, that goes well beyond decency as far as I'm concerned, and Spencer Haywood should be elected next year anyways, as far as myself and Seth just said, we both believe he's a Hall of Famer. But if you're not going to know, don't say anything. It's kind of hard to put that genie back in the bottle. And I feel really bad for Spencer Haywood today. Seth, on to you.
Well, we pretty much only really covered college basketball today, which was a fun little change for me. But I want to give a shout-out to a team I didn't see this coming. The New York Knicks, going to clinch the Atlantic Division.
We are the New York Knicks. I'd say go, New York, go, New York, go. All right, go ahead.
And going for 13 in a row tonight. An impressive win at Oklahoma City. This is a team that, if they – in the fear was as they got a little further in the year, they get more and more tired. And it's then the opposite's happened. Kenyon Martin has been pretty much what I would have expected Kenyon Martin to be. I don't know why everyone was so surprised. They are a definitive threat in the East. In the East, I mean, obviously it's still Miami than everybody else. But I'll tell you something. Miami has had trouble with Chicago, trouble with Indiana, trouble with Boston, trouble with Knicks. It's going to be a fun – I don't really love the NBA regular season, but I do enjoy the playoffs, and it should be fun. And that's all I really got for today because I'm at the end of busy season, and I am absolutely wiped out. So for Sean Palmer – we're going to end a minute and a half early. So for Sean Palmer, Seth Kamens, Seth and Sean, backsportspage.com. See you guys next week.
See ya.